Hey everyone, I'm Avery Brooks.
And I'm Christy Mathern.
And you're listening to the Western Colorado Writers Podcast, where we talk to writers about writing. Today we're excited to be talking about poetry with two amazing and accomplished Western Colorado poets, Beth Paulson and Lisa Wentz Connors. First up on today's poetry episode is the poet laureate of Ouray County, Beth Paulson.
Beth has published 6 collections of poetry since 2001, and her poems have been included in countless poetry compilations and over 70 literary publications. Many of Beth's poems have won or been nominated for literary awards, including Best of the Net, the Janet McCabe Prize, the Pushcart Prize, the Mark Fisher Prize, the Naugatuck River Review Narrative Poetry Contest, and others.
In addition to her writing, Beth leads a number of workshops and literary activities in Western Colorado. She co-founded and co-directed the Open Bard Poetry Series in Ouray County, and she also leads Poetica, a workshop group that meets in Ridgeway. In 2019, she was asked to be the first poet laureate of Ouray County, a post she maintains to this day. Beth has lived on the Western Slope since 1999, and before then, she taught English at the University of California at Los Angeles for over 20 years.
Beth is joining us remotely from Ouray today. Thank you so much for sitting down with us, Beth.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So when you started writing poetry, did you ever dream that you'd be nominated multiple times for the Pushcart Prizes and become the first poet laureate of Ouray County?
Absolutely not. I have to say that what I foresaw when I first started to get serious about writing was actually bringing poets into the area where I live here in Ouray County. That was my goal, was to, you know, maybe have some workshops and readings and bring poetry to the community. I was doing my own writing too and trying to get better at it. But my main goal really was to try to bring poets from the region and from the state and beyond to a little mountain community that didn't have that going for it. So no, I didn't imagine that. I guess I got lucky. You know, I worked on my poetry and found a few little obscure journals that liked what I wrote.
How has serving as the poet laureate of Ouray County affected your life? What have you done as part of the post?
Being poet laureate, being named poet laureate, was for me kind of the icing on the cake. Because for nearly 20 years, I had been doing the work sort of, you know, behind the scenes. I didn't have a title, but I was working at teaching writing and creativity classes and leading a workshop group, working with students in the schools from time to time, especially when we would have a visiting writer come to the community. And then I was lucky enough to be able to direct a reading series under 3 different arts umbrellas over those years. So I kind of feel like I was given the title of poet laureate as kind of a laureate, you know, just a thank you for that, for what I had done. And I have to say the work and the fun is still continuing. What I did most recently was solicited from the community and then put together a small anthology of writing from people who live in Ouray and Ridgeway. And it was a lot of fun because people came out and contributed poems that I didn't even know were interested in poetry. So we met a lot of new potential poets out there hiding in the mountains and got them down in the town for a book signing last September. So we put out a little book. It's called Ouray County Writes. So I was very pleased about that. I would say as poet laureate efforts, that was the most rewarding.
Very cool.
That's awesome. So what is the beauty of poetry to you, and what does it give you that other forms of writing don't?
You know, I thought a lot about this, and I think for me, the beauty of poetry is that it is such a focused type of writing. Unlike fiction or essays or nonfiction, Rita Dove says, poetry is language at its most distilled and most powerful. And I think that her definition really sums it up well. And Ted Kooser says that through a poem, we see the ordinary world in a new way. He's so good at that. And in a new way that is often compelling and even beautiful. So I think both of those two definitions, poetry being distilled and poetry being a compelling type of writing is what drew me, what I find beautiful about poetry. And I love all writing, but for me, poetry is number one.
So what captured you initially about poetry, and what made you decide to take that leap of trying to create it for yourself?
Ooh, how far back to go? You know, you don't want to go back to when your grandmother read nursery rhymes and those things, but I'm sure that all has something to do with it. At an early age, hearing the cadence of poetry. But no, seriously, when I think about this question, I think back to my college teaching career, which started in like the late 70s. It was a time when, believe it or not, there weren't a lot of women compared to men in academic positions. And as far as the country as a whole, the canon of poetry had very few female writers. And yet it was a time when finally some very talented women writers were getting published and did have books and were reading their poetry. And so I was inspired by this, you know, and I think a lot of my women colleagues were too. Some of us got together and did write and share our writing and go to readings. You know, in the LA area, there was quite a bit of choice, those kinds of things going on. Oh, Plath, Sexton, Bishop, you know, those names are very, there are very few of those. But then later on in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s, more and more women were getting published. And so I read everything I could. Went to a lot of readings. And I think seeing this large cohort of women writers who were beginning to get recognized and honored for their writing in the 80s and 90s in the U.S. kind of gave me permission that I could maybe try to write too, you know, that there were people that wanted to maybe hear my writing too.
You've said that poetry depends on paying attention. A lot of your poetry focuses on nature as well. How does getting out in nature help you pay attention and spark ideas for a poem?
Oh, I'm sure you and other people have noticed this too. You don't have to be a writer to know that when you are out in the natural world, your attention is taken by the things that are around you. So I think you're more alert, and for different reasons, you know, like I don't want to trip over a rock. So I'm alert to that. But you're also alert to animals and plants, and you're more fully awake when you're not distracted by the things that you find in an artificial environment to distract you. So whether it's leaves floating in a creek or, you know, a deer crossing the path, you remember it and carry it back with you. I'm not one of these writers who carries a notebook. People do, you know, and they take one in their backpack and so on. I might do that on a long hike, but usually what I do is I carry the thoughts back to me, the experiences back with me, and then I will journal about what's things that have stood out for me or that I thought of while I was out in the natural world. And then sometimes a poem comes from that. Yeah, I think it's because we pay attention. We're more alert. I think that's probably the reason that the natural world does figure in my poems.
So is that how most of your poems start? Is that your first starting point for a lot of your poetry?
Well, it can be, but not exclusively. You know, something can trigger a memory, and then that can stick around in your mind for a while, and you think, maybe I'll write a poem about that. We can be inspired by lots of things, a photograph, maybe a painting, and a reading. Goodness, I'm an avid reader, and I think sometimes either a large topic that you've read about or just a line, a few words in a piece of writing that you are reading can trigger a poem, and often does for me. I find myself jotting down phrases and thinking, I'm going to write a poem about that sometime. Yeah.
And what does that process look like for you when you have that maybe line that you want to move forward from? How do you develop that? Is it over a long period of time, or is it like you sit there one day and nail out a major poem and then, you know, maybe craft it a little the next day or something?
Oh, if only it were that easy. Yeah. Sometimes, a very few times, the first draft will be, you know, pretty darn good. And you think, I don't want to monkey with this too much. That isn't usually my experience. Usually, of course, I start with journaling. And then if I think maybe this will be a poem, then I'll write more phrases down, more words down. Maybe I'll decide it's time to put them in some kind of order and you know, move to the computer and do that. And then, you know, leave it for a while. Although sometimes it's hard to leave it. You just want to work on it and work on it. And, you know, all of a sudden it's dark and my husband is saying, are we going to eat? You know, but usually, you know, you leave it and then and come back some days later and after it's marinated a while and work on it some more. But no, I'm not one of those people that dashes off a poem and thinks it's great and or good enough to show to someone. I want to keep it for a while. I guess that's the teacher in me. I, after all those years of teaching people, revise. I can't seem to. And, you know, sometimes you get in trouble that way. You can revise something too much and really it's not as good as it was. So keep those drafts.
So you mentioned you're teaching and you're involved in a lot of different workshops for poetry series and things like that. So what do you enjoy most about teaching others to write and appreciate poetry? And do you have any kind of fundamental principles or works you would suggest to someone who's more of a newbie to poetry?
Yeah, well, I really enjoy it most when people who haven't been exposed to much poetry except when they were in high school or maybe a little in college come up and say, oh, I used to think poetry was so hard. It's not at all how I remembered it. People who have been to a reading, you know, and they've heard a poet read their words. I remember one man coming up and saying to me, poetry is like a painting with words. You know, and I thought that was a pretty good definition. So I think for me, when people get turned on to the fact that poetry isn't something they should fear, that poetry is for them, and whether they want to be a hearer of poetry and, you know, come whenever they can to hear visiting writers or a reader of poetry, or whether they want to try themselves to write poems, however they're experiencing it, it's just very exciting when someone gets turned on. As far as what to do if you're starting out, well, gosh, I think you just have to follow your heart. Start writing, start journaling, write what you know, what you imagine, what you experience. Read the writers that came before you. Read. And then when you actually get into trying to craft your writing, try for freshness of your word choices, trying to have a consistent voice in what you write. Good grammar and spelling, of course, goes a long way, unless that's part of the poem that you're writing. You want to use bad grammar or spelling. Play around with the received forms. You know, feel free to try the sonnet or some rhyme and rhythm. And rhyme and rhythm are part of our language and they're part of poetry. And whether it's overtly end rhyme or not, you know, poets love words and use rhyme and rhythm in different ways than was done in the past. So I think those are some things to think about for people starting out. And one book that I really would recommend, and I haven't come across anything better than this, is Ted Kooser's book, The Poetry Home Repair Manual. And it's just the best book that I've come upon to just, in his plain style of writing, give advice to beginning poetry writers. I very much recommend it. I don't know, it's probably in like the fifth printing or something by now. It's been very popular.
And how does writing poetry complement and benefit writers of other disciplines, in your opinion?
You know, I never thought about that. I think it can and does. In my creativity classes, I've had people from different professions. And so I'm aware that creativity is certainly a quality that is beneficial and in the business world and in so many fields. But the one that comes most to my mind is science. People in science, especially physics, you know, have to use imagery to be able to explain these very, you know, unseen phenomena in nature to do with the atom. And so astro to nuclear physics, I think those people, some of them are poets with the words they come up with, you know, like up, down, top, bottom, strange and charm for the types of quarks. And so I think having the freedom to use imagery in explaining anything in any field that requires description, poetry can feed into that talent. I like to think so anyway.
Flash fiction is becoming a popular genre. It's defined as a very short story. So it is, you know, separate from poetry in some ways, but what similarities and differences do you see between poetry and flash fiction? And have you ever tried writing flash fiction?
I think it's fascinating genre, and I know people who do it, and I have not tried it exactly. I've done it maybe accidentally, because in my Poetica workshop, which group of writers that gets together in Ridgeway for the past dozen or so years, we always start out the workshop before we get to our poems, doing a fast writing with a little prompt. And some of those turn into what would almost be flash fiction. And so, you know, we played around with the genre, even though maybe we haven't known that that's what we were doing. And I think it is different. The closest thing I can think possibly to flash fiction would be a longer prose poem. The prose poem is a form that comes to my mind. But the thing about the prose poem is it doesn't have to have a narrative plot or a surprise ending. It's still a poem. And so even though it might look on the page a little bit like flash fiction, it wouldn't be. So I think, and you know, another thing I thought about, well, a narrative poem, you know, the narrative poem where you are trying to tell a story or an experience would be close. But again, it's written in stanzas, usually. It doesn't have to have a surprise ending like we would expect in flash fiction. So those two, I think, would come close, but no cigar. Flash fiction is what it is. And maybe I will try it. Now you've got me interested.
Well, and it's funny because I have some friends that do flash fiction contests and some of them are winning awards in it and that kind of thing. But I just feel like people are going to, as they keep trying it, they realize, oh, this is pretty much like poetry, and maybe get some crossover between the two different disciplines, you know, through that.
I think that could happen.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So some libraries and bookstores classify poetry as nonfiction. Would you consider your poetry to be nonfiction?
No. Gosh, isn't it still called 811 in the stacks? 811, isn't that reserved for poetry? I know not all libraries use that system anymore. But no, I wouldn't. And here's why. Though a poet, I think, draws from experience and biography even, the poem is, for me, a work of art. It's a created thing. And so imagination comes into play. Now, I know people say, well, there's creative nonfiction, of course, but that's a whole different thing, too. I would say no. Primarily, I would call it fiction. Again, it may have its genesis in personal experience, but I think most poets think of their poem as a created thing. The truth in a poem, though, is the emotional truth, not the literal truth. I think that pretty much says it all. Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about how your process has evolved, but can you speak more about how your writing process has changed over the years?
Well, of course, we're all dependent on the computer today more than in the past. And, you know, all the time that I've been writing, for the most part, I've used a computer. But I always start out with pencil and paper just to jot down ideas. But then quickly, I do move to the computer. And so the computer allows us to move lines around so easily, move, you know, all of these things give us so many opportunities to revise and change. And we can access thesaurus quickly, other information quickly. And so in that sense, you know, with Google and so on, I think the computer has enhanced the ability of writers to move quickly with a draft of a poem if they want to. I still love sharing a poem, though, with real people face to face when it's a draft. And I'm very lucky to have this Poetica workshop that has been ongoing for so many years in Ridgeway, because it's just fun to share a draft with other people. And then I have a couple of other longtime friends that, you know, we share poems with one another. So I don't know if that answers it exactly. Maybe it sort of skirts the question.
Well, I think it's an interesting role to think of what computers have done. And just as an aside, I don't know if you're a Bridgerton fan on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, I have seen it. Yes.
Okay, so season 2 came out and I was watching a little bit of it. It just came out yesterday and they have poetry readings and they're talking about that. And they actually had a beautiful quote, which I was like, I should write this down for the interview tomorrow. And of course, I did not. But it's basically like the ability of poetry to highlight the beauty of a fact or the truth. Anyway, it was really well said in that episode. But, you know, it's getting at that point of the beauty of a well-written line, you know, and back long before computers were here, you know, that you could read poetry and recite that. And that was entertaining. That was an evening, an outing.
It's so changed. So changed. I mean, when you think of Emily Dickinson, you know, who wrote little scraps of paper that she put in her apron pocket, for heaven's sakes, you know, and then would pull out different times in the day and scribble on it with an ink pen. And of course, people did read to one another. That was what they did, whatever the genre was, you know, the Bible, from the Bible to novels to poetry. And we've kind of lost that. You know, we've got television and movies and everything at our fingertips now and our phones. But, you know, even in the 19th, the early 20th century, I think people did read to one another, especially in rural areas of our country. This was what you did in the evening. You know, life changes. But the value of hearing, I think that's what we capture in a live poetry event, a reading that you might go to, is you are actually hearing the writer read his or her words to you. And people cherish that and come out for it. And especially since the pandemic is finally winding down, was one of the things we were starved for, you know. We had Zoom readings, but again, not quite the same.
I'm just curious because you brought up that you use critique or feedback from your readings to maybe help, you know, craft future drafts of a poem. And so I know, you know, a lot of people in writing novels and things like that, they will work with a critique group. I didn't realize that poets use that process so much as well. So do you have any comments about how important that is in your own craft of writing?
Well, I think it's very important, and it's a personal preference. I know there are people probably who write without consulting other people. I don't personally know anyone who does. In fact, a woman recently joined our Poetica group who had been a writer who didn't share her work with other people. And now she's starting to do that and sees the value of it. I let my group read first drafts of mine along with everyone else. And I've gotten valuable insights from people. You want to be able to communicate well what your intent was in a poem. You know, did I get to the emotional truth? Do these words work? Can I do it better? Is there a better title? Do you get lost when I read my poem to you anywhere? Is it okay to be lost, or are you too far lost? I mean, we like mystery in poems, but we don't want it to be completely mysterious. And so I find value, and I think the people that are in our workshop find value too. We're very gentle with our critiques, but also honest. And I think a workshop group where everyone feels supported and valued, people don't go away hurt. You know, because you're a community of writers, you expect people to be honest with you.
Thank you.
Are you working on anything right now that our listeners can look out for?
Yeah, well, I don't have a particular research topic or something that I'm, you know, trying to get deeply into. But I am working on stylistic loosening of lines. Ooh. I'm trying to let myself take more leaps in poems and allowing myself to be more meditative in a poem, you know, giving myself permission for that. So I think maybe the word style of writing is loosening up for me. I just find a need for that. So I'm doing that. I still want to write poems that engage with the world, though, and with the reader. Even if the inspiration for the poem is personal, I feel like the reader should be able to find something of him or herself in the poem. So I never want to lose sight of the reader, the audience. That's just a personal preference. I don't write just for me.
Well, it's interesting. The stylistic loosening of lines. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Feeling, you know, letting go of that old grammar background from teaching college writing all those years. It's okay not to have a period at the end of the sentence in a poem.
It's true. So since this is our poetry episode, and poetry is a kind of music when read aloud, we couldn't let today pass without asking our guests to read some of their work. Beth has brought a few poems to read aloud for us, titled The Way Things Work and Psalm for Ukraine.
Thank you. I will be glad to. This first poem, The Way Things Work, I decided it was okay not to be serious, to just kind of have fun. The Way Things Work. Fan blades turn in a circle. Tires spinning fast move cars along the highway. Charged batteries feed the clocks, the microwave. Water pressure opens the tap. As the flame waits for the log, it anticipates the gas. Like perfect teeth, the piano keys wait for the brush of fingers. A painting dries by itself. The blinds are mostly blind. They can only tell light and dark. The wood planks of the floor hold up the furniture. In the night, mice move across them on their own tiny feet. So I had fun with that one.
I love it.
Just sometimes you can just have fun. This last poem is quite new. I wrote it just a couple of weeks ago. I've been reading the Psalms lately in the Bible. I guess that was maybe in the back of my mind when I put this poem together. I called it a psalm, Psalm for Ukraine. Let the people who would be free speak. Let the leaders unstop ears to their voices. Let the people eat the bread of courage and let their children drink the milk of safety. Let the people cross rivers on their own bridges and let the homes they built remain havens. Let the city dweller sleep without fear of gunfire and let spring rains fall instead of bombs. Let the villager not lose hope and conviction and let the enemies of the people no shame. Let the soldiers return to their mothers and wives, and let the wheat fields green and sunflowers rise up.
That's touching. Gave me chills a bit. Beth, thank you so much for sharing your time and your work with us today. You can find information on Beth's workshops and events and more of her poetry on her website, wordcatcher.org, or on Facebook. And if you're near Denver, Beth will be doing a reading at the Book Bar on July 25th.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you so much.
Next up is poet and creative writing instructor Lisa Wentz Connors.
Lisa Wentz Connors is an accomplished poet and a retired veteran of the U.S. Army. She hosts the monthly poetry night at the Grand Junction Central Library, facilitates creative workshops for the VA in Grand Junction, and is a member of the Rock Canyon Poets Group. Lisa's poetry has been published in Atlas and Alice, Alexandria Quarterly, Gyroscope Review, Colorado Journeys, and many other literary magazines.
Last August, Lisa earned accolades at the local Veteran Creative Arts Festival and went on to place first on a national level with her poem, Moat as an Impressionist. This first place win allowed her to represent VA Western Colorado in April at the 41st National Veterans Creative Arts Festival in St. Petersburg, Florida.
So Lisa, congratulations on your success and thank you so much for sitting down with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk about poetry issues.
So what is the beauty of poetry to you, and what does it give you that other forms of writing don't?
Poetry is distilled. It's pared down. It's just the in-the-moment essence of anything the poet is talking about. It forces you to be in the moment because you can't be thinking about something else when you're reading a poem or listening to a poem. And I think that is the value of poetry.
And what captured you initially about poetry and what made you decide to try creating it yourself?
When I was a kid, I belonged to a youth group at church, and Father Krings really encouraged us all to express ourselves. And since I was an avid reader, he said, maybe you should try writing something. And he would listen to all of my just really crappy attempts at poetry. It was nice having that sort of validation. And when I was in the Army, I would always write down lines, metaphors, things I came up with, observations I made on pieces of MRE toilet paper or whatever I had, you know, margins of my manuals and that sort of thing. I didn't really have a way, though, of connecting with civilians. And after I retired, I found I had a hard time fitting into the community here. And poetry gave me a way to connect with people. So I got involved with Poetry Night at the library. I joined a group called Women Writing for a Change. And that really helped me to connect with people in the community.
So you're kind of like the great Dolly Parton, writing like lyrics on the toilet paper as she would do.
Well, MRE toilet paper isn't good for anything else.
Good to know.
When you come across an idea for a poem, how do you get started?
Well, mostly I just jot down things when I encounter them, deep noticing, observations that I make. And then later I sit down at my desk and that's where the work begins. I take about, 20, 25 minutes and about 600 words and just brainstorm until I can find the lines that really resonate. And then I pull those out and those become the framework of my poem. But it might take months to fill in the framework.
So it's months-long process for each poem?
It's a never-ending process because every time I pull them out, I print out a clean copy to read somewhere or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I could change that. And I could change that. And so they're constantly evolving. They're never settled.
I've read that you split your time between the Grand Valley and Salt Lake City. Is that part of your process, like traveling?
Traveling is part of my process. I find that I get my best ideas on the road, in rest areas, campgrounds, motels, airports, planes, all the in-between spaces where you're not here and you're not there, but you're kind of free because you've surrendered to the flow of the movement. You're going to get there when you get there and there's nothing you can do about it. So your brain is free to think about other things.
How has your process changed over the years?
It used to be I waited for inspiration to write a poem. And now I don't. I can say, I need to write something new. And flip through my notes, look for something that speaks to me that day, and start writing a poem. So that's a big change for me. I'm more productive because I'm not waiting for inspiration, waiting to feel like writing a poem. I kind of force the process.
So you've kind of taken control of it. That's awesome. What can you always count on for inspiration?
People. Inspired people are inspiring. So when I come to Poetry Night, and we have a class at Poetry Night, the people inspire me. And when I leave, my brain is overflowing with new ideas, and I just sit down when I get home and I write. If I find that I'm like totally stuck and I can't come up, can't get the writing going, go to a reading, listen to the people, come home, and my brain is just full of ideas. So people are inspiring.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you first got published?
I have originally started doing translations. When I was in language school for the Army, we would go up to Stanford University for lectures because they were the ones who conferred our certification on us. So there was this professor, Professor Joseph Frank. He's really well known for his work with Eastern European literature. And he encouraged me to translate poetry. And so I did. And I learned a lot from the Polish poets, and it gave me sort of a weird, artsy, eccentric way of speaking in Polish that people can't really figure out where I'm from and what I'm about. They think I'm a little strange. But I started translating, and my first publications were translated poems. Then after I was here and started working with Poetry Night, and the poets there. I started to get published locally, The Sentinel, Colorado Journeys, that sort of thing. It wasn't until I got to the Rock Canyon Poets on the Wasatch Front that I was really inspired to try national contests, national and international journals, that sort of thing. Now I'm published in dozens of journals and anthologies, and yeah, it's been good.
And how does writing poetry complement and benefit writers of other disciplines, in your opinion?
Distillation. It teaches writers to write in the moment, all the things that poetry is good for, to cut out the unnecessary language and to take what's a utilitarian sentence and make it a lovely sentence.
So you mentioned a little bit about the poetry nights at the Mesa County Central Library. How did that come about? What made you want to lead that group?
Well, when I first came to the Valley, when I retired, like I said, I didn't have a way of connecting with people, and Poetry Night at the library gave me that opportunity. It's been running for more than 20 years. When I came in 2008, Dr. Lopez was running the class, and that was where I first started learning the craft of poetry. It's more than just an affinity for language, and that was when my poetry started getting really good. After Dr. Lopez, then Jennifer Hancock took over running the class, and I learned a lot more from her. And then there came a time when she wasn't able to run the class, and I couldn't let this amazing thing die. And although any one of the members of the group that regularly comes to class could teach the class, people have things going on in their lives and such, and so it had to be someone who was willing to devote the kind of time it takes to put that together.
For anyone in our audience who's curious, what can they expect from a poetry night?
Poetry night is, well, it used to be 2 hours. Now it's an hour and 45 minutes because the security guards like us to be out. For the first hour, everyone reads a poem if they want to. They don't have to. They can just sit and listen. But they read a poem. Generally, it's in response to the challenge that was issued the month before. But if you just weren't feeling the challenge, you didn't come, you didn't know what the challenge was, you can bring any poem that you want. The challenges are always just a suggestion. As each poet reads their poem, the rest of the members do a gentle critique and offer encouragement. It's not like we're going to rip your poem apart and make you feel awful. So that's the first hour. Then the second 45 minutes, the second hour, we learn something new. So we study a poet, a school of poetry, or a tool for your poetry toolbox and go into that. And then at the end, a challenge is issued for the next month, maybe to write a poem in the style of the poet we studied, or to take a line from that poet and make it your own in a poem, or to use that tool. And again, it's always a suggestion because we're poets and you can't force a poem. If you're not feeling it, write something else.
And you're also involved in facilitating poetry workshops for the VA in Grand Junction. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that you do there?
Well, we have 2-hour classes. It's set up as 8 weeks, an 8-week course, 2 hours each week. And we go over the fundamentals of writing poetry, just the basics. And the veterans are encouraged to write from the very beginning. They're offered a lot of prompts, things to get the juices flowing. But again, just like Poetry Night, it's a suggestion. If none of the prompts are working for them, they can write about whatever they feel like writing about. And then we workshop the poems. So the veterans talk them out. They make suggestions. They help each other write better poems. At the end of the 8-week class, a journal is published, a volume of the High Desert Cadence, which is a journal of veterans writing. We've had 2 so far. The first one was all male soldiers writing, and the second one was all females. We have a recreation therapy employee present with us when we're having class in case any issues related to their service, trauma, or other serious issues come up, because I'm not qualified to handle that sort of a situation.
I didn't know you guys did a compilation. It's at the end of the courses, right?
It's at the end of the class. The students pick the layout, the cover, the artwork. Usually it's a veteran artist whose artwork they pick to put on the cover. And then each veteran gets 5 to 10 copies to give to their family members and friends. The journal is available at the VA. They're all over the place. They're in the lounges and places where people can just pick them up and read them. And that's to generate interest in attending the class. Though you do have to be referred to the class by your doctor. So you could be coming from your therapist. You could be coming from your general practitioner. You could be referenced in from, heck, the podiatrist, you know, if they think
so
it would
help. So any doctor.
If they think it would help.
So you've been doing this for about 2 years, right?
Yes, 2 years now.
Can you speak to how the program has grown in the past year and how it helps its participants?
Well, we were the first activity to come back after the COVID lockdowns. So we were extremely limited to what we could do. It's really hard to workshop when you're socially distanced, but they did. Everybody did a spectacular job. The students worked really hard. As far as growing goes, now that COVID has receded a little bit, we're looking at going into the CLC, which is the long-term care facility, and doing a class with them. And also taking the class off-site to the Colorado OneSource classrooms that they have over there, and doing an evening class for younger veterans.
And I'm just curious, what was the reasoning between like an all-male first journal and an all-female? Is there going to be like a co-ed thing, or is there more of a plan of that?
Well, the first class, we started with males and females in the class. Mm-hmm. But in the course of 8 weeks, we lost our female. So it ended up being all male. And the second one, we specifically decided to do all female because we noticed that there was a level of discomfort talking about those personal things. Like, she wasn't going to write a poem about female issues in a room full of men. So we decided the second class would be just females in case we got any of those issues, not to mention military sexual trauma is a huge problem right now. And we weren't sure if we were going to run into any of that in the class.
As a veteran yourself, I guess I'm asking you if you can speak to the power of therapeutic writing, and specifically in the form of poetry, you know, for yourself and also just as a facilitator of this group, you know, how it's impacted you.
I'm a lot more comfortable talking about the difficulties of my service when I'm with other veterans. I kind of feel a responsibility as like a cheerleader for the Army, go Army, that I don't share the bad things that happened with my civilian friends. It's like, I joined the service to experience that, so you don't have to. And honestly, of all the people that I know and love, I would never want them to see the things that I saw. And I really don't want them knowing that I saw them.
What do you enjoy the most about teaching others to write and to appreciate poetry?
I felt that poetry was a gift given to me, first by Father Krings in the youth ministry, and then by my instructors at language school, and finally by the people here like Dr. Lopez and Jennifer Hancock and the women of the Women Writing for a Change. They gave me that gift. So I kind of feel a responsibility to pass the gift on to other people. And I love to see how people light up when they realize that they have written the perfect line. Because you know it. You know it when you've written it. And just to see people shine, it's a privilege.
What fundamental principles and works would you suggest to a newbie?
Ooh. The most important thing is to expose yourself to other people's poetry. I hear a lot from young poets, they say, I don't want to read other people's poetry. It might influence mine, or I don't have time to read other people's poetry. I'm writing my own poetry. You learn so much from other people's poetry. It gives you an idea of what's already been written, too, so you're not writing the same thing, because we all experience the same things in our lives. So it's very easy to have a lot of overlap and to be writing stuff that's really derivative and not new without knowing it. And as far as recommending something, there's a book called Writing the Life Poetic by Sage Cohen. It's a very gentle introduction to writing poetry, and I think that people would, if they're newbies, would really benefit from that.
So flash fiction is becoming a popular genre, and it's defined as a very short story, so it is different than poetry. So what similarities and differences do you see between poetry and flash fiction, and have you ever tried writing flash fiction?
I have written flash fiction. There's like a super fine line between prose poetry and flash fiction, in my opinion. And I think that the real difference is prose poetry has space in it. Even if it's a solid block of text, there's space in it for the reader or the person listening to it to bring in their own experiences and make their own interpretation. Whereas flash fiction has a definite purpose, a point, an endpoint that the writer is trying to get across.
So some libraries and bookstores classify poetry as nonfiction. Would you consider your poetry to be nonfiction?
You can never assume that a poem is true or autobiographical. Even if they're using the word I, even if the poet is using the word I in the poem, you cannot assume that they wrote that poem about themselves. And that's part of what makes poetry, in a way, therapeutic, because you can write something really painful, but your audience is not supposed to think it's you. I would say that poetry is genreless. It's not fiction. It's not nonfiction. It's not memoir. It's not anything. It's a poem.
What would you say to people who maybe haven't looked into poetry because maybe they're raised in, you know, English classes in high school where you had to see all the, you know, metaphor and all these things? I mean, what do you tell people that are just trying to dip their toe in it, but maybe feel like it's too high class or something?
The problem is in school, they had very little time to teach something that's a huge subject. I would recommend not being intimidated, not trying to sit down and write a villanelle right off the bat. Don't worry about rhymey, matchy-matchy, you know. Don't worry about meter. First, get your words out onto the page, and anybody can do that. It's after you get the words out on the page that you start to sculpt it, chip away at it, and make it a poem. But you have to start somewhere, and, you know, just write it.
And are you working on anything right now that our listeners can look out for?
Actually, I have finally finished my first manuscript for my first chapbook. And so I'm shopping it around right now, and I've had some interest. So hopefully you will see my chapbook, Praying in the Crosswalk, before the end of the year.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is wonderful to hear. Lisa has brought some work to share with us. She will read poems titled Ars Poetica, age 51, and Hot Flash Poem number 18, Red.
Ars Poetica is it's a form of poetry that is formless. There's no specific way you have to write it, no number of lines. All it means is that it's a poem that is about a poet's relationship to poetry. So it can be about their process. It can be about their love of poetry. It can be about, well, anything relating to their relationship with poetry, listening to poetry. So this is Ars Poetica, age 51. The last day of summer brings that unexpected killing frost, and you hurry outside to pick the green tomatoes. They fill your countertops, your kitchen table, the vegetable bins in your refrigerator. Even though you know they have value, for there is sustenance there, no one wants them as they are. half-formed. Not like at the beginning of the season when your friends couldn't get enough of them. Breaded and fried, slathered with Miracle Whip, you rush to process them. Vinegary pickles and salsas, any hope of succulence lost in the haste to use up all of your self-indulgent words. No confession is unique. Priests are dying of boredom, forced to commit sins they wish they could hear about. Instead, wrap them as carefully as crystal in newspaper, black and red and yellow grocery store ads full of mealy offerings easily acquired. They don't know the taste of steadfast forbearance, alchemy, and the science to turn emeralds into rubies. The last gifts of a summer well-lived wait in cardboard flats stacked on the wooden bench, once blue. Your hands hurt when you unwrap them, and your knees hurt when you climb the stairs. Leave the priests to hear their astringent confessions. Go revel in voluptuous red roundness, juice that glistens in the sharp autumn light. Each seed, a whole universe, a poem that transcends the trauma of a killing frost. Okay, hot flash poem number 18, Red. Some random spin of the wheel, often at 2 a.m., a pilot light near my heart ignites. Fuel from the same lines as other things that burn. Passion, anger, craving potatoes fried in bacon fat. Throw back the covers, turn the pillow. There is no cool relief roasting in my own hormones. A fireplace, a grill, a crematorium, burning away what makes me woman. A kiln, reshaping, hardening, charring sheets, a carbon negative. Inside the pocket straight up play pays 35 to 1. But I've lost all my chips. No more bets on whether I sleep tonight. The croupier has passed his hand over the table.
Lisa, on behalf of the Western Colorado Writers Forum, thank you so much for sitting down with us today and sharing your work, your insights, and your perspective. We really appreciate it. And Poetry Night events meet in the Mesa Room at the Central Library in Grand Junction at 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of each month. And for more information, you can visit mesacountylibraries.org. The Western Colorado Writers Podcast is the official podcast of the Western Colorado Writers Forum, a nonprofit organization based in Grand Junction, Colorado. The forum's mission is to foster a rich and diverse writing community on Colorado's western slope that invites participation from diverse cultures, customs, and life experiences. The forum hosts Writers' Night presentations at the Grand Junction Center for the Arts on the first Tuesday of every month, where local and national writers give presentations on their craft. Sign up for the forum's free newsletter at westerncoloradowriters.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Western Colorado Writers Podcast. If you have thoughts or suggestions for the podcast, please drop us a line at westerncoloradowriterspodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is made possible through the support of the Grand Junction Commission on Arts and Culture.